He saw many crowns on it, all of them whole. The hill of memories was in constant movement, old pains burying new ones, then being buried in their turn. The relics that emerged at the top did not stay there long. Merineth would have to move quickly. She was more than ready to. Every moment she passed in the presence of Craniax increased her pain. The Velkin half of the sundered crown appeared. It was a crescent of iron, forged in the likeness of savage thorns. No jewels were mounted in it. The crown was a black, sullen lump of pain. It would be the source of still more. Merineth sprinted away from the wall. She ran in a curve, staying under the arc of Craniax's hair. She leaned into the spin of the room and timed her arrival at the mound, so that she was just below the position of the crown. She spread her wings and shot up the slope. There was no room for stealth in this theft. She had to rely on speed. She raced against the suddenness of loss to deliver a shock of her own. She was at the top of the mound. The sundered crown began to sink out of sight once more. Merineth's feet barely touched the surface of the hill, and she snatched the crown. It was heavier than she had expected, weighed down with accumulated ages of grief. She held it with both hands and launched herself down at the shaft. Craniax's wail stuttered. The Mad Queen felt the theft. The presentiment of new loss stabbed her. Merineth felt the wild gaze fall on her. She was over the shaft. With a powerful beat, her wings propelled her down and then swung back. An arrow she sliced into the darkness. The wail came for her. It roared into the shaft, an avalanche of rage. It fell on Merineth and it tore a scream from her throat. It attacked her soul with such force it threatened to rip her body open from the inside. She screamed again, not in anger but in defiance. She held the image of Neferata before her. The Mortag of blood commanded her, not the crazed thing in the keep of the howl. The hurricane of anger battered her from side to side. It sought to force her back up. Her descent slowed. The air was turning thick as mud. She spread her wings again and beat them furiously, forcing her way through the wail. Craniax's anger almost yanked Merineth's wings from her shoulders, but she held fast to her being. She had her prize. She knew what she would do with it. Neferata's purpose exalted her, and she began to pick up speed again. Craniax's wail became desperate. It shook the walls of the shaft. Fissures appeared, racing down the walls ahead of Merineth. Wedges of stone broke free and plummeted with her. They were large enough to crush her to nothing. She weaved between them, tucking into a ball and then diving down again. When a massive shard fell, she flew just above it, and it became her battering ram through the wail. The walls changed. They became irregular. Merineth had dropped below the foundations of the keep. She was in the volcano's throat now, and falling faster. The queen's shriek was losing its grasp on her. If Craniax had relinquished her death grip on even a small part of her realm, and so used a greater portion of her strength to seize the spy, Merineth did not think she could have prevailed. But the Banshee could not reason. She could never release what she held. Merineth flew closer to the falling stone until she was almost touching it, blending her shadow with it. The mouth of the volcano was close, and with it the devourers. Merineth braced herself against the still powerful gusts of the wail, holding herself near the centre of the rubble. Smaller shards exploded out of the shaft and collided with the rock. Shrapnel sliced into Merineth's leather armour and tore her face. She held her position. The shard and Merineth shot out of the crater amid a rain of rubble. Braced against the blows of the wail, she was vulnerable to the true winds of the storm outside, and they caught her. They threw her away from the shelter of the rock, revealing her to the carrion beasts. No other bodies had fallen for them while she held Craniax's attention, and they let out huge, rattling caws, angry with hunger. Three of them saw Merineth. Their sinuous necks shot forwards. Their jaws filled with teeth as long as her arm parted. Clutching the sundered crown, she spread her wings wide, breaking her fall suddenly and rising back up into the whale. The monster's lunges missed. Two of the beasts collided, and they snapped at each other in anger, their necks entwining as they sought to bite down and decapitate their rival. The third swooped its head up, empty eye sockets trained on Merineth. Its maw opened wide, and it lunged again. It was too close for her to evade, the jaw too long for her to fly over or under. So she flew directly into the maw, then angled hard right as the beast's jaws closed again. The teeth brushed against her legs above and below as she passed between them and snapped shut behind her. Merineth turned again, diving close to the struggling monsters. She spiraled down around their necks. They were still fighting when she dropped out of their reach and was free. There was one last immense blast from the whale as Craniax felt the loss become final. The fury tore one of the devourers apart, and its fellows turned their attention to snapping up its disintegrating bones. Merineth angled straight down, heading for the base of the clouds and Angaria below them. Doubts in enemies are useful, but their convictions are equally so. I choose to encourage the certainties of my foes. In this way, they commit themselves all the more fully to their mistakes. A well-timed warning of disaster, especially if true, can ensure the embrace of catastrophe. Neferata, Truth as Destroyer. Chapter 11. The anvils of the Heldenhammer are on the point of marching, my queen, Lady Skintha reported. Returning from her scouting journey to the southwest, the spy had landed in front of Nagadron, bowing to Neferata, who stood beside the Adivore's lowered head, her armoured crown under her arm. Skintha paused, looking past Neferata at the march-ready army behind her. But you know this already, she said. I expected it, Neferata said. When Scarveth had met with Rassan, she had seen the anvil's level of preparedness. Deducing when they would be ready to move had been a simple matter. Your confirmation is useful, she said, and Skintha lowered her head in gratitude. Knowing when the Stormcast Eternals should be ready was not the same thing as knowing they were. She held the war's events in her grasp. She was about to make the pieces tumble before her, one after another. But for her design to be fulfilled, the timing of her actions had to be precise. If she marched too soon, Venthor might choose to attack her as the immediate threat. If she departed too late, Vask might change his mind about the idea that Neferata had, by means of Nargia, implanted in his mind. It is time, Neferata said. There will be no more waiting. The true battle for Angaria begins now, and there will be no rest until it has fallen. Your victory will be glorious, my queen, said Skintha. I shall have it so. The pieces on the board were arranged in accordance with her desire. Nonetheless, her opponent was powerful. She must not underestimate Graunos. I have another task for you, Neferata told Skintha, sparing a quick glance at the ridge above her gathered army. We have come to the moment of completion. I understand, said Skintha. I know what I must do. There will be no error. Good. Then go. The spy departed, and Neferata donned her headdress. In full battle regalia, flanked by her Morghast Archai once more, she was ready and eager for the battle ahead. She mounted Nagadron and turned back to look at her forces. She was satisfied with what she saw. This was not yet the grand army that would soon invade Angaria, but it looked like it might be. To the thousands of skeletons, wraiths, vampires, mortals and ghouls, She had commanded the addition of 3 siege towers. They were impressive structures, forbidding things of dark wood and iron, their upper portions glowing in the deepening twilight with the fire within. They were also a form of theatre. She had no intention of using them for the purpose they appeared to have. She was not marching to take the Wrathgate. Her prizes were of a very different sort.
"It is time,"
Neferata proclaimed. Her voice rang across the plain. Its command reached every soul in the ranks, alive or dead. She tugged on Nagadron's reins, and he rose.
"March with me," Neferata called. "This night we bring humiliation and destruction to the enemies of Neferatia."
The army roared, and as one, her servants of war advanced. As Nagadron flew south, Neferata thought, "Humiliation and destruction." She was not sure which fate was more delicious. Nagia fled her hiding place. She had found an outcrop at the top of the ridge. There was a crevice between the boulders in which she could be concealed while she watched the army's preparations. There was no reason to stay there any longer. The earth shook with the tread of thousands of feet. The air screamed with the cries of banshees. Neferata was heading south, as Nagia had told Vask she would. She was heading south now. Vask had to know. The end game had begun. It was full night when Nagia reached Nulamia. She passed through the gates with a trade caravan that was just arriving and made straight for the closed market. She was taking grave risks, but there was no choice. The message had to be passed on. Nagia stood outside the shuttered stall of Ersath Zay. She knew his name now. Everything had changed since the gathering. She could feel the onrush of fate, and it thrilled her. She stayed in the shadows and remained silent. Her presence was signal enough. Ersath was always watching, and he would see her. She was there only a few minutes before Ersath appeared. She did not have to say anything. He nodded slightly and vanished. Nagia left the market and returned to the Thresend Manor House, satisfied in her work, agonized in her being. The hunger had returned, descending viciously within moments of Ersath's departure. It was as acute as the first night. No, it was worse. All the way back from the market, iron talons of pain spread through her guts. She could barely walk by the time she reached her home. She staggered through the doors and up the stairs to her wing. She hurried to her chambers as fast as she could on stiffening, weakening legs. A memory from the first night of the pain was trying to surface, a memory of salvation. In her bedchamber, something had happened. The pain had been taken away. Her thoughts were muddled, thick and tangled. They were being stirred by a clawed finger. The closest thing to coherence she could manage was the hope that the salvation would be there again. Nagia entered her bedchamber and locked the door. Bent double, she was halfway to her bed when a shadow detached itself from the wall beside the window. A woman stepped into her vision, and the claw withdrew from her thoughts. She could think clearly again, even through the pain. Memories rose from the dark waters where they had been submerged. She remembered this woman. Her name was Skintha. She had brought a young man to Nagia's room. There had been blood. Blood had sated the hunger. Blood had taken away the pain. Nagia's throat went dry. "What am I?" she asked, though she knew. The answer Skintha gave was not what Nagia was expecting.
"You are a traitor."
"No," Nagia began. Shame, stronger than the pain of hunger, shook her. Despite herself, she was frightened. "You are mistaken. I am loyal to our queen." Skintha smiled, and Nagia heard laughter. It came from inside her head. She was sure she recognized the voice. It was neither hers nor Skintha's. The laughter unveiled more memories. The rest of the night of the victory revel came back to her. She remembered her flight through the streets. She remembered the black knights closing in on her. She remembered Neferata. And she knew whose laughter was in her mind. Skintha walked towards her. Nagia staggered back a few steps. There was no point in running, so she straightened as much as she could.
"I am proud of what I have done for our just cause," she said.
More laughter, and Skintha joined in too.
"Is that what you think?" she asked. "Then you are wrong. You are a traitor twice over."
She seized Nagia by the neck with both hands.
"You have done so very well," said Neferata. "Now it is time for your reward."
Skintha's grip choked Nagia. She could neither speak nor scream. She wanted to cry out, to give voice to her horror as she realized the trap she had helped set for her comrades. Then the pain came as Skintha shifted her grip. She pushed down on Nagia's shoulder and yanked her chin up at the same time. The sudden flare of agony was terrible. But more terrible yet was the cracking and tearing that came with it. Worst of all was the sudden giving way.
"Now you can see everything," Skintha said.
She turned Nagia's head around to show her, in her final moments, the geyser of blood from her decapitated body. Neferata turned to the Morghast Archai flying on her right.
"Curdathax," she said,
"I need you to be a messenger for me." The armoured skull of the monster cocked in puzzlement.
"A messenger, my queen?"
it asked with a voice of crackling thunder. The creature was a destroyer of armies. It descended only to kill, not to speak. "Yes, that it comes from you will ensure that its importance is clear." If Curdathax was still puzzled, it asked no further questions.
"I will not fail you, my queen."
"Oh, you will. I am counting on it."
The anvils of the Heldenhammer had barely left Shadowvale behind them when the monster approached from the northwest. It flew on tattered wings and bore an immense spirit halberd. The weapon's blade was almost as tall as a man. The Morghast hovered just above the ground, a short distance ahead of the anvils. It held the halberd in one hand, upright. That was as much of a signal of peaceful intent as a creature such as this could manage. Rassan, mistrustful, readied her axe for attack. As they drew nearer, the Morghast called out,
"Lord Celestant Venthor Warfire, I bring greetings from Neferata, Mortark of Blood."
Venthor pulled Velkreth to a stop and held up a hand. The Stormhost halted. Venthor's Drakoth growled low, glaring at the monsters. To Rassan, Venthor said,
"Come with me to listen to what it has to say."
And he urged Velkreth forwards again. Rassan walked beside the Drakoth and they stopped a few paces away from the Morghast.
"Well," said Venthor,
"the Queen marches from Nolamia to join you. She asks that you delay your advance a short while, that we may fight at your side against the Demon Prince."
Venthor grunted.
"Your queen refuses to understand my clear statements on the possibility of an alliance. The days when the forces of death and the forces of Sigmar could make common cause are over. We are at war. I will not be drawn into her games. I will not pause, and if I see her coming up my rear flank, I will know that she is coming to attack, and I will respond accordingly. Am I clear this time? If she misunderstands again, the consequences will fall on her head."
The Morghast said nothing. It issued a rattling growl, then flew off into the night.
"Do you really think she means to attack?"
Rassan asked as they returned to the Stormhost.
warning us about her arrival is an unusual strategy.
Everything about the Mortark is unusual, said Venthor,
and everything she does is for her benefit, not ours. We might just as easily presume that announcing her coming is intended to make us lower our guard, and so be vulnerable to her attack.
He shook his head.
I meant what I said. I will not be drawn in.
I am not sure that is something we can avoid, Rassan said uneasily. She had been unable to get the conversation with Scarveth out of her mind.
We can, said Venthor. I have declared our actions. What she does next is up to her, but I refuse to guess. I will treat her presence as an act of war, as she will now know. This is clarity. This is certainty. There will be no game, and there will be no delay.
With the coming of dawn, the anvils of the Heldenhammer entered the Axeway. The sheer cliffs of the stone panes rose on either side of them. The pass led straight ahead. Though it was wide, daylight barely reached into its depths. The shadows of the stone panes covered the ground. The light was grey as dead skin. Rock crunched under the steps of Stormcast Eternals and Drakoths. The winds screamed down the length of the Axeway, so sharp it seemed they were slicing the cliffs anew. Janika Stormmire, flying forwards with her prosecutors, sent a scout back to warn that the Wrathgate was close. Soon after, its glow appeared in the distance. Watching the gate grow larger as she marched, Rassan thought about how straight the Axeway was, and how vulnerable any attacking force was to its defenders. There was no chance of taking the barrier by surprise.
Anvils of the Heldenhammer, Venthor called. Our goal is in sight. Prepare for the enemy's fury. Let it break against our armor. Let us answer the false light of the ruinous powers with the pure lightning of Sigmar.
The warriors of the storm host roared, weapons held high, and at their Lord Celestin's signal, they charged forwards. A tide of Sigmarite armor raced towards the wall. The thunder of the advance rumbled through the pass. The cold fury of a just war filled Rassan's soul, and the fall of the Wrathgate seemed as certain as destiny. Nothing could withstand the collective juggernaut of a storm host. A hammer of indescribable might was about to smash into the barrier. As the great mass of the host rushed towards the wall, light struck the top of it. The prosecutors dropped straight down from the clouds. They sent a hail of ethereal javelins ahead of them, and a second searing, murderous dawn broke over the top of the Wrathgate. The defenders appeared as silhouettes at the moment of their destruction. Rassan saw the human warriors of the Bloodbound sundered by the explosions of ethereal energy. There were other shapes, inhuman ones, that were caught in the fire of Sigmar's judgment. They were lithe, horned, and their limbs were angled in a way no living humans ever had been.
Demons on the ramparts, she called to Venthor. Bloodletters! I see them, Venthor said,
and Velkreth snarled. The Lord Celestant sounded grimly satisfied.
Graunos will fight hard to keep this gate. It is important to him. Its loss will be fatal in the long run.
The prosecutors pressed their attack. The top of the Wrathgate flashed again and again. Bodies fell, tumbling and broken. The upper portions of the ramparts glowed an angry orange, and Rassan saw the first cracks appearing. The gate was massive, and there was a long way to go, but this was a very good start. The skull, though, worried her. It, too, was beginning to glow. There was a crimson glimmer in the eyes. The weapon was gathering power from the deaths on the wall, and the Bloodbound were still replacing their losses as fast as they happened. There might still be hope of smashing the defenders faster yet, and overwhelming them before the skull's hunger was sated. Rassan called upon the lightning, shouting her invocation, feeling the energy flow into her and from her with a ferocity unique to Shaiish. She sprinted forwards and slammed the shaft of her hammer into the ground. Her storm broke over the ramparts, searing flashes incinerated bodies. For a few moments, the centre of the ramparts was clear. But the light in the skull's eyes grew even brighter.
Khorne cares not whence the blood flows, Rassan thought bitterly.
Lord Celestant,
she called.
I see it, said Venthor. Sequiturs, ready the shield.
The sequiturs were marching in a long formation, stretching down the length of the spearhead of the advance. As one, they raised their soul shields towards the gate and its baleful icon's gaze. Silver energy crackled, leaping from shield to shield. As the sequiturs channeled their defence, etheric power gathered over them and then spread, shimmering over the other ranks of Stormcast Eternals. The anvils of the Heldenhammer advanced swiftly. The assault by the prosecutors stopped the Bloodbound from mounting a concerted response to the closing Stormhost. The volleys of arrows that they managed meant nothing to the Stormcast Eternals. They flew through the etheric shield, but it had been created to defend against a much greater, more meaningful attack. The arrows bounced off and snapped against the Sigmarite armour, harmless as rain. The Stormhost was close now, the gate looming high, the skull a rictus of hate above it. The warriors spread out across the entire width of the pass. They would hit the gate along its full length. Venthor's plan of attack would have been absurd with an army of mortals. But the brass of even as massive a structure as the Wrathgate could survive the assault of a storm host for only so long. The prosecutors struck again, strafing the defenders with javelins. Light, green and white, erupted over the Wrathgate. A steady fall of bodies struck the ground far below. And then the skull's eyes were blinding, their red even brighter than the burning glare of the prosecutor's attack. The skull turned on the mechanism that suspended it until it looked down on the assailants. Its jaw gaped wide, and the flames of rage descended upon the anvils of the Heldenhammer. The pass vanished from Rassan's sight. She was suddenly in the mouth of an erupting volcano. Demonic fire filled the air above her. It blinded her with corrupted light. It breathed destruction over the sacred banner of the anvils of the Heldenhammer, seeking to blacken its iconography, and then burned harder yet. The hatred in the fire would not rest until the symbol of fealty to Sigmar evaporated. But the banner did not burn. The shield of the sequiturs held. It flared with light as blinding as the fires. Absolutes of purity and ruin clashed explosively, and the anvils of the Heldenhammer moved forwards again. The ground beneath Rassan's feet began to soften. She pushed on, though the burn that made it through the etheric shield seemed to be heating her plating to incandescence. The flames were unending. Their intensity kept growing. Rassan's ears were filled with the roar of ethereal rage. Coherent thought became difficult as the world fell into fire and pain. Through it all, she had her purpose, and Venthor's voice of thunder resounded in the pass, urging his warriors onwards to the Wrathgate. The flames of chaos began to fade, and though the ground was half molten, the base of the gate was within reach. The prosecutor turned from the skull and reached back to summon another ethereal javelin. Cathag seized his chance. With a roar, he leapt, weapon in hand, and grappled with the Stormcast Eternal. They crashed to the parapet and rolled. The javelin appeared in the Stormcast's hand. It was too late. Cathag brought his axe of Khorne crashing against the prosecutor's gorget. The struggle was decided before the blow even hit. Cathag's blade was blood-tinted brass, streaked with a deathly grey. Claws spiralled off the end of the shaft and along the top of the axe. His reward from the Skull God, when he ascended from the title of Exalted Deathbringer, was a reminder of failure and a goad to greater victory. The grey in the axe and the curl of the claws symbolised the vortex of grey nothing that had consumed Lord Ruhok's warhorde. Cathag had been part of that defeat. His survival did not mitigate his failure. Every time he used the axe, his god's favor and his god's scorn confronted him, and they pushed him to ever greater victories and ever greater feats of violence. There was another echo of the maw of uncreation that Neferata had unleashed on that day in Nulamia. When Kathag swung the axe, reality twisted and snapped around its passage. Eddies of disintegration radiated outwards from the blade. When Kathag attacked, the world bled as much as his enemies. The prosecutor's armor curled like burning paper before the axe strike. It shattered, pieces caught and swallowed by the vortices in the air. The blade severed the warrior's head at a stroke. For a brief moment, blood came from the warrior and from his armor. The tribute to the Skull God was short-lived. It always was with the Stormcast Eternals. Kathag rose and turned away from the body with contempt, before the mystical lightning called it back to Sigmar. Death had lost all meaning for the Stormcast Eternals, Kathag thought. Even these dark anvils of the Heldenhammer did not know what it truly was any longer. And with no purpose in death, there was no purpose in life either. Kathag's existence had plenty of meaning. There was the conquest of empires. There was vengeance against Neferata. And there would be the exaltation of hurling Sigmar's warriors back. The Wrathfire had not stopped the Stormhost yet, but it forced the prosecutors to retreat behind the shield created by their comrades. Then the skull exhausted its energy. The blast of fire came to an end. The skull would grow strong again, with new violence and new souls. When it was fed, the fire would come again. The skull's breath was nothing compared to the great beam that circled Mausolea. It was a small tributary of that power. It served well enough, though. Except the anvils of the Heldenhammer were still advancing. They had weathered the first blast and were attacking the base of the gate, ignoring the ramparts, depriving the skull of the fuel of violence. Kathag might have to start feeding it his own troops directly. He would if he had to. But the waste would displease him. He shouldn't have to. His hand might soon be forced, though, if the second phase of the campaign did not begin immediately. He looked out over the battlements, past the lines of Stormcast Eternals. The axeway beyond them was quiet. That was wrong. The enemy should not be having this chance to regroup. Kathag growled. There was no time to waste.
Brezek!
He shouted. The gore-chosen slaughter priest rushed to Kathag's side. Brezek's left eye was gone, replaced with a brass skull. His right eye blazed all the brighter, and he had cut off his eyelids so his wrath would never sleep.
What is your command, Lord Kathag?
The skull needs volunteers for glory. Get them, now.
At once.
What are you waiting for, Vask? We've handed you the chance for victory. The anvils are expecting you. Attack them, as Graunos commanded. Attack!
Vask remained stubbornly absent. Kathag stared into the axeway, thinking of the enemy that was temptingly within reach. He thought he could destroy them. He stopped himself.
You know better. Arrogance destroyed Ruhok. You spoke reason to Graunos, and he listened to you. So listen to yourself. Rage must be directed, not squandered.
If he ventured out of the wall, he would be fighting on the terms of the anvils of the Heldenhammer. Kathag looked at the skull. Already Brezek had gathered a group of skull crushers, and they were hammering blood reavers to death underneath the skull. Soon, the eyes were blazing with anger again.
Too soon?
Rassan thought as the monstrous weapon fired once more. The Bloodbound must have been sacrificing themselves by the hundreds. The Sequiturs hurled their etheric shield against the fire, but they had not had the chance to recover. There was a thunderclap of exploding energy, and the fire of wrath broke through the shield. The blaze pushed the Stormhost back. It was too powerful to withstand without the shield.
Shelter! We need shelter!
Rassan would create the shelter and the time to regroup and strike again. Staggering under the agony, her flesh roasting inside her superheated armor, Rassan summoned Sigmar's lightning and sent it to her left against the cliff wall. Though she could not see her target, a huge cracking roar told her she had struck home. A portion of the cliff gave way. Beyond the cataclysm of red, something huge thundered, and then a massive shadow loomed through the flames. Rassan lunged out of the way as the rubble shouldered through the fire. She ran back and threw herself over the new hill of stone. It blocked the flames and the worst of the heat. She could see again, though the pain of her injuries tried to blind her anew. A moment later, Venthor joined her. Smoke rose from Velkreth's hide, and the beast was thrashing in agony. The Stormhost's formation became a narrow one as its warriors took refuge behind the rockfall. The demon fire was so ferocious, it would melt the rock eventually, but only if the foe kept destroying his own troops to keep the fires burning. The battle at the Wrath Gate turned into a siege. The anvils of the Heldenhammer attempted to storm the gate, and Kathag forced them back. Always they came again, smashing the gate with greater force. Each time, Kathag replenished the Skull's power with the blood of his own troops, killing off hundreds more when the Stormcast Eternals resisted the attacks with their sorcerous shield. Kathag could continue to do this for some time. He could not do so indefinitely. And still Vask refused to appear. Kathag prowled the battlements in frustration and anger. Pausing briefly from his relentless slaughter at one point, Brezek approached him.
"Has Vask betrayed us?"
he asked.
"No," said Kathag. He was sure of that, if nothing else. "Vask's anger is too strong. He would never ally himself with Sigmar's dogs."
"Then why does he wait?"
"There is another reason. I do not know what it is."
"He will be punished for this delay."
"Oh, he will," Kathag promised.
No triumph would be great enough to compensate for Vask's absence. The necromancer had doomed himself. The siege dragged on. Kathag's frustration and anger grew. Every charge of the anvils of the Heldenhammer weakened the gate further. Time was running out. The Skull had just finished turning another rockslide into melted slag, forcing the Stormcast Eternals back again. But not for much longer, when a blood-letter demon stalked over to him.
"News, Lord Kathag,"
it hissed.
"News."
The demons were more restive than Kathag's human troops, and the mortals were straining at the bit to charge through the gates. The demon looked at him with open contempt, but he ignored the insult. It had to obey him, and his dismissal of its taunting provoked it still further.
"What news?"
said Kathag.
"An army approaches."
The bloodletter growled at the prospect of a new threat, and the sense that someone was interfering with Graunos's designs. At the same time, it grinned in eagerness, because a greater battle meant greater violence, and in the end, that was a suitable gift for the Skull God.
"What army?"
Kathag asked. Then he knew.
"Neferata."
The demon nodded. Its lips drew back over sharp teeth in a smile and a snarl.
"The dead are coming,"
it said.
"The dead come to bleed and die anew."
Kathag turned away from the bloodletter, dismissing it. He felt none of the demon's violent joy. He felt only anger. He understood now why Vask had delayed. The necromancer knew that Neferata was coming to the Axeway Pass. He was waiting, planning to attack both the Mortark of Blood and the anvils of the Heldenhammer. He was dreaming of destroying them both in a single blow.
"Dreaming?"
Kathag spat. He knew what must have happened. Neferata had tempted the necromancer into this overreach.
"She let you discover what she was doing, didn't she?"
Kathag asked the absent Vask.
You fool! Can't you see that you're doing exactly what she wants? You think you outwitted her with your spies? You think you can win when you are playing her game?
He slammed a fist against the edge of the parapet. Brass deformed under the blow. Vask's delay had already cost Kathag troops, feeding the skull and maintaining the siege. Neferata's manipulations were hurting him too.
Attack then, Kathag shouted. Do it, Vask! Here is your ambush. Here is your perfect trap. Prove me wrong. Let me see your victory.
Kathag summoned Vergren, his exalted Deathbringer.
Ready our forces, he said. We march through the gate soon.
The Deathbringer grinned. He had filed his teeth to points almost as sharp as a demon's.
Sigmar's dogs are on the run.
No, said Kathag. The tide of battle has turned against us.
Bergren stared, baffled.
How is that possible?
The anvils of the Heldenhammer are the tools of another enemy. She will be here soon, and she has already drawn blood. We may not defeat her here, but I will still have a trophy for Khorne.
Neferata was close now. Her army was leaving Shadowfell behind to the south, and the line of the Axeway was visible in the mountains ahead.
Curdathax, she called. Fly to the Lord Celestant. Warn him of what is coming. Warn him that he is about to be ambushed. Tell him we are coming to help, but he must be prepared. Warn him of the trap to come, now that it is too late. Tell him the treacherous dead arise.
The Morghast flew off, and Neferata laughed. She revelled in the sensation of deliberately marching into a trap. A trap whose risks were delicious. A trap she had shaped. A trap she controlled. A trap that Vask thought he had set, and that was about to close on his neck. War has no certainties except destruction. The believer in a foregone conclusion is a fool who deserves extinction. Let us, then, find pleasure in the uncertainty, the risk, and the tempest of chance. If we can do this, then our pleasures, if nothing else, are assured. Neferata, War and Ecstasy. Chapter 12. They gathered at a ruined farmhouse several leagues to the west of Mausolea. Neferata herself had chosen the house and directed her spies to use it for this purpose. It was one that Gessa had flown over many times on her journeys west from the city to the Stonepane Mountains and back again. She had given it little notice. It was a minor signpost on her flight, nothing more. The house had been empty since the coming of Graunos. During the initial conquest of Angaria, his war hordes had stripped this region of all crops and killed the farmers who grew them. The building was falling into ruin. The farm was beneath any notice, less than insignificant. Velazza remembered Gessa's surprise at Neferata's questions early in their mission, almost a year ago now. The queen had seemed more interested in the buildings Gessa overflew than in the disposition of Graunos's troops. Velazza understood now. Neferata had seen this far ahead. She had planned this moment even then. Velazza wondered how anyone dared to challenge a being with such foresight. The spies had made their way from Mausolea with meticulous caution. They had made certain that no one had followed. They were safe from the enemy's eyes here. Tavencia eyed the interior with distaste when they entered the house. There was a hole in the roof. Broken timbers and stones littered the floor. Moss spread where rain had fallen. The wooden table and chairs in the main room were blackened with mould. Thick layers of dust were draped over the corners of the room. Tavencia shook her head.
Should we be doing something? This is hardly fit to receive Lady Meneneth.
Velazar felt the same impulse. The spy mistress would be honouring them with her presence. It seemed wrong not to treat the occasion with some ceremony. All the same, she said,
"No, our queen has chosen this location. Therefore, it is as it should be."
Merineth arrived soon after nightfall. A shadow flickered over the hole in the ceiling, and then she was there, standing before her spies. Her face was strained. She looked exhausted. Her mission had taken a toll.
"Is he here yet?"
Merineth asked.
"No," said Velazza.
"He had further to travel,"
Merineth admitted,
"and he does not fly."
"Is it possible he did not succeed?"
Epigente asked. Merineth laughed.
"If Scarveth failed where I triumphed, he shall hear about it from me. He only had to deal with the sane sister."
Merineth stepped out of the farmhouse. Velazza followed. They were on the crest of a low hill. This had been one of the most fruitful regions of Angaria. It had been scoured like a chewed bone. Merineth looked east towards Mausolea and the sentinel of the shroud. She stayed where she was for most of the hour it took for Graunos's beam to complete a revolution, then walked to the other side of the hill. To the west, the land rose like waves in a storm. Ridges sharp as knife blades built up, climbing higher in a staggered pattern. They resembled the saw teeth of a creature's maw. Over the course of days with slow, heavy grinding, the low hills rose and the high ones fell, and then the cycle would repeat.
"He will come from there," said Merineth.
"How close are the boundaries of Obsidia from here?"
Velazza asked.
"Not far. Less than a day's ride."
"And we are less than a day from Mausolea."
"Yes," said Merineth. "That would not be much of a warning. It is still more of one than our queen would like to give."
"I understand," said Velazza.
Merineth turned to face her, her gaze serious.
"I hope you do. Our queen commands, and it must be done. But what I am going to ask of you, I do not ask lightly."
"Anything you ask is my glad duty to fulfill."
Merineth rested a hand on her shoulder and turned back to the western prospect. Their vigil was not a long one before the Hell Knight appeared. He was riding swiftly, his carrion horse tireless in death. He was draped in the night, though Velazza could see him clearly. His armour, engraved with the heraldry of Neferata, seemed to glint with a cold inner light that rendered its darkness even more profound. As he drew near, Velazza wondered how a being with no face, no expressions, could radiate so strong a sense of nobility. There was, in Scarveth's posture, a deep pride. It came, Velazza sensed, from what he served. Here, she thought as he dismounted, was a warrior who defined his entire existence through the commands of Neferata. That was nothing less than it should be. Scarveth bowed to the spies.
"My ladies."
"The rest await us inside," said Merineth. "You come bearing a gift, I trust?"
"I do. Also a weight of guilt. I feel that, compared to yours, my efforts were utterly negligible."
Merineth smiled.
"Your guilt is appreciated, but unnecessary. You have already sacrificed much for your queen."
"I don't think I have. Rather, I have gained everything."
"Well said," Velazza remarked.
"I am sure that the time will come for greater sacrifice," said Merineth. "That is the nature of our calling. That is what we owe Queen Neferata."
"I am glad of it,"
Scarveth said.
"I will be ready."
In the farmhouse they stood around the rotting table. Merineth and Scarveth produced the two halves of the sundered crown.
"So, Othalas gives leave to pass through Obsidia?"
Gesser asked.
"Yes,"
Scarveth said.
And she will join in the march on Angaria, once she has proof that the crown is whole.
Everyone will have proof of that, said Merineth. Epikente cocked her head, looking at the two halves.
It has the power to do all that.
It has the power it has been given, Merineth said, especially from the Mad Queen. I believe that one part of its strength is innate. The rest comes from the sisters, and the importance they place in it. Thus it becomes important to us. Velazza picked up the pieces. The break was jagged. When she placed the halves together, the seam was almost invisible.
I don't suppose holding it together will do, she said.
No, said Merineth, and no simple forge will do. The crown must be reborn through fire and blood, and most of all, by loss.
Ah, said Velazza.
She saw more clearly what would be asked of her and her sisters. Epikente and the others nodded solemnly.
What fire will be sufficient?
Tavencia asked. There are a few possibilities that would be powerful enough. Only one, though, that will achieve our queen's goal. Merineth looked east, through the empty doorway of the farmhouse, towards Mausolea and its terrible light.
Let her purpose be served, said Velazza.
Let this duty be mine,
Scarveth said. He let out a dry rattle of a laugh.
I can pay my debt of guilt.
No, said Merineth. Neferata commanded me to refuse your request.
She knew I would ask?
Scarveth sounded surprised.
She thought you might. She has other tasks for you, and you have no blood.
The Hell Knight's skull turned to face Velazza. What did she think she saw in those empty sockets? Sorrow? Regret?
We are, like you, glad of our service to the Queen, she said, whatever form it takes.
Merineth left shortly thereafter. Velazza went outside as Scarveth readied his horse for the journey back to the boundaries of Obsidia, and thence to Neferatia.
I know you have not been in the Queen's service long, Velazza said, yet I feel as if you have always been of our number. I find this curious.
Scarveth ran a hand over the raiment of his horse.
I know what you mean,
he said.
I do believe that I have always served her, in one way or another, through two states of being. When I lived, I labored for her in secret. She did not know of my existence, but everything I did had the goal of aiding her against her enemy. I was born into a family of traitors. Ending that treachery was my guiding purpose for as long as I can remember.
Neferata is luring Vask onto the battlefield again. Do you grieve that you are not present for that encounter?
His fist tightened on the dangling reins.
I do, yes. I grieve whenever I am not by our queen's side.
As do I, Velazza said.
This time she was sure she saw sympathy in the eye sockets. She did not think she was projecting what she wished to perceive onto Scarveth. His next words proved her right.
Then I grieve for you, too. You have been separated from her for much longer. And now...
I am proud of what I will be able to do, she said.
I am proud, too, of my mission. If I am not by her side, it is because she needs me to be somewhere else. And that is all the honor I require.
He paused, thoughtful.
I was apart from her until the day I died. This is a short separation by comparison. And...
He struggled for words, as if all those he found were too small to convey his full intent.
I tell you this,
he said at last.
I died on the field when I finally rode to join our queen. But I had never truly been born until she raised me from the dust. Do you understand what I mean?
I do, said Valletta. She gives us purpose.
Without her, I have none.
I did not think of her as you did before I was turned. She was the queen, and that was all. I did not serve her. I wish I had. I cannot say that my life had meaning. My existence does now. So I understand you very well. And I envy you. You have indeed always served her loyally. He bowed his thanks.
I hope to prove myself worthy of such praise.
I am pleased to have met you, Scarveth Lightesian.
And I you, Lady Valletta. I wish you victory.
It is assured,
and it will be delicious.
Scarveth leapt onto the back of his horse. He nodded to Valletta and rode off. Valletta watched him go until the night swallowed him again. Then she went back inside. The other spies were at the east window, watching the sentinel of the shroud turn. She joined them.
Do you know what irks me?
Gessa said. No. What?
That I can't be with Graunos to see the look on his face when it happens.
The Morghast Archai had barely flown off when Rassan heard the distant sound of drums and the blast of a fanfare that exulted in the promise of the mass grave. Neferata's army was closing in on the Axeway.
She mocks us, Venthor growled. She warns us of the very ambush she is springing.
The thought crossed Rassan's mind that Neferata was going through considerable effort for so petty a goal. But the pleasures of the Mortark were unfathomable. Though her doubts flickered, sparks that refused to die, Rassan did not question Venthor. Shall we turn and face her? She asked. The Wrathgate skull was scouring the pass with flame again. The battle mages of the Anvil's sacrosanct chamber had joined Rassan in blasting the walls of the pass. Hundreds of thousands of tons of rubble had fallen. Between every blast, the attacks hammered the base of the gate. It was close to breaking.
We stay our course, Venthor said after a moment.
The Lord Celestant was still mounted on Velkreth. He had remained so, a beacon to his troops and a target for the enemy throughout the siege. The hill of rubble before them had grown to block almost half the pass. The anvils of the Heldenhammer were formed up in close ranks near the eastern edge of the rockfall. It would take them no time at all to round that point and rush the gate. Rassan saw Venthor glance to her right. He was evaluating the chances of success. The time between the skull's streams of fire had become unpredictable. The bloodbound might be running out of sacrificial fodder. The weapon was going hungry.
We are about to break through the gate, said Venthor. If Neferata is trying to taunt us into battle with her, she will have to wait her turn. We are caught between foes no matter which way we charge, so we will seize our chance to take the gate. Once we force it open, we will alter the battlefield. Defenders and ambushers will both fail at a stroke.
Venthor's logic was sound. Rassan had no reason to disagree with it, yet in her heart she did. His approach was too rational for the perversities of Shaiish, and one of the perversities' greatest authors was closing in on them. Instinct told her Venthor was making a mistake. Reason and loyalty argued that he was in the right. She kept her doubts to herself. She believed she was correct to do so. Reason dictated that she follow this course of action. Much later, when she looked back at this moment, she would realize with pain and anger that a part of her, a part she refused to listen to, was already cursing her, raging against the magnitude of the error.
She would try to tell herself that she was the only one of her comrades to feel this way, that the other leaders of the Anvils of the Heldenhammer had no such doubts, that she had been manipulated by Neferata into this condition. The truth of all these things would not matter. They would not give her any comfort. She would remember, with bitterness, that the disaster began with furious hope. Venthor lifted his hammer high and called for the charge.
"Now!" he cried. "We claim victory now! The gate is ours! Now it falls!"
Felkreth roared loudly enough to shake a hail of fragments from the cliffs. He charged to the right. Rassan shouted, summoning the anvils of the Heldenhammer to the banner, scorched yet proud. The storm host shouted back, and thunder rose from the floor of the pass. The Stormcast Eternals charged around the end of the rubble and headed for the gate. They held their shields over their heads, defending as they attacked. The strategy was a single-minded rush of force. There was no long-range strike by the Judicators or aerial strafing by the prosecutors. It went against Rassan's military instincts to leave the enemy on the ramparts alone. Yet they could not risk feeding the skull more deaths. The entire storm host became a colossal swing of the hammer aimed at the base of the wall. The Bloodbound hurled spears and arrows at the anvils of the Heldenhammer. A hail of death that would have laid waste to the front lines of a mortal.